Nancy Pelosi says, you know, the Democrats are going to win the midterm. She's going to be the speaker again.
Yeah, shouldn't that scare everybody?
Right.
So, you know, I have a lot of friends, you know, in Washington, bipartisan, you know, conservative Democrats, very liberal Democrats. I think they are getting tired of this, of the senior leadership. But the reality is, the Democratic Party is progressively moving farther left. The West Coast has a predominant members of Congress. I think there's 59 congressional seats, and of that, 50 or 51 are Democrats. So right there is a big bulk, and we'll be it to the Democrat from California who doesn't support someone from their own state for speaker. So she could very well survive. Now the question would be, would she get 218 on the floor for confirmation, the same type of thing that we struggle with? And I guess that's where we will see.
Paul Ryan stepping down, not running for re-election. That's a more proper term, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little frustrating. Paul's our, I always like to call him, he's kind of a technocrat. He's very smart. He's a believer in market economics and lifting people up through, obviously, the opportunity to work and get a wage and have ownership in that. And so we're going to, and he's a thought leader. So I think we're going to miss that. I never really complain too much when people want to get off the treadmill and try to spend more time with family. And I think that is a part of the issue because his kids are high school aged. And as I know, you know, my old youngest is graduating from high school, go away to college, and I'm not sure where that time went. So good for him, but I wish he would stay.
The chaplain for the House of Representatives rescinding his resignation yesterday, Reverend Patrick Conroy. What's going on there, John?
Yeah, you know, that's another. So as Paul Ryan is a technocrat, a thought leader, I think this move shows that he's not very politically astute. I'm not sure what the issues are or the problems were. I don't, you know, the chaplain has a lot of roles. One role everybody sees every day, either he gives the opening prayer or he helps arrange for our visiting clergy to do that. But his more important role is to meet the needs of the members and our staff as a pastor, a shepherd of the flock, for counseling, for grief, for all that stuff. So I do think there's probably truth to some of the concerns, but it just shows you how clueless the speaker is politically, because I think most of us were caught by surprise, and then of course then it got spun politically, and then we knew it was really a mess. And even this rescission probably makes more political sense to just get this off the table and try to figure out what's going on. But most members had no idea this was going on.
3.9% unemployment. I think it's 163,000 jobs, something along that line. Let's see if I've got the number here close. You know, more good news. 4.9% in the state of Illinois, and in southern Illinois, even higher. But there's something going on here. You know, more and more employers say, I can't find the employees I need here in southern Illinois. We hear at other places, we've got states, communities that are offering people as much as $5,000 to pay for your student loan or to put down on your new house when you move in, paying off student loans. That's an interesting idea. Something's going on when it comes to the job market, and hopefully that'll be followed by increasing wages.
Well, this is really the conservative playbook. Create an environment. We do that by cutting taxes, using regulatory burden that encourage our businesses to grow, based upon the tax reform. 55% of manufacturers across the country are going to capital expense grow, which means they need to hire more, which means it puts pressure on the job market, which means that the qualified people can then, in essence, ask for higher wages. I mean, it versus the liberal view of let's raise the minimum wage, because what that does is depress the market. It really drives people out of even entry-level work. So this is a case study. 3.8%. I think it's the lowest since, you probably know what,
2000. 2000. Yes. Lowest since 2000. I mean, 164,000 jobs added in April.
Yeah, jobs in the economy, growth and wage increase and benefit packages. This is all great news. And 3.5%, I think, is the number that, in essence, is viewed as full employment for the country. They think 3.5, the folks 3.5 below aren't going to, they don't want to work.
So, right. You know, it's interesting, John. I've read a lot about this over the years, that where is the line of people who don't want to, won't ever will, right? And very often I've read that 3% figure up and down from that. And what I'm talking about here, John, this is something that's been personally curious to me. You know, because you've heard Bernie Sanders, everybody who wants a job should get a job with the federal government at $15 an hour. Anybody wants one. You see this universal base idea in other countries where everybody who lives in that country, if you need it, you get $739 a month or whatever the case.
Right, right.
And you know, it's interesting that you brought that up because I've been talking to other people about that, and it's really a lot of people are hesitant to talk about it because it makes – well, in this current politically correct environment, people are sensitive to that. There's a certain group that don't want to work, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Yeah, and I apologize if people don't want to address the facts, but I think in economics and the view of U.S. economy and how we operate, I mean, that's not really disputed that there is that whatever 3.5% is considered full employment because you do have a percentage of people. And that, you know, that just also addresses welfare reform, the issue of should people do something if they're receiving some benefits. I think most Americans think they ought to do something, whether that's volunteering, additional educational training, look for a job, because it's taxpayers who pay for those that sector who don't want to work. Now, we're not talking about, obviously, the disabled. We already have the programs for that. And the safety net there, but these are just people who just have, they don't want to.
Right. A Rasmussen poll found that 46% of Americans are in favor of getting a guaranteed salary from the government.
Yeah, Finland tried that for a couple of years, and they just rescinded it. So,
yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you want money handed to you? I think, I'm surprised the number's not higher.
Right.
But that's bogus. Good for those who want to receive free money. I think there's value in work and value in compensation.
So what did you think about your time with Mark Zuckerberg?
Interesting. Facebook, actually, I was with Facebook yesterday too. They were in my district and Effingham had an event on Facebook for small business. And I was very curious to attend this. Just to see what the response would be and whether the crowd would be big, would it be small, would there be protesters, would there be this and that. And it was a lot of people from Effingham and the surrounding counties came to see how they could use that platform to help grow their business. It was a very positive event. That's not answering your question. But I do think is this, he's still a young man. I think that he has created a new medium that anybody who wants to, the question is, what are we doing with private information and should people know how that's used? And his big problem, and you know, Cambridge Analytics just declared bankruptcy.
Right.
So the question is, how did they get that information? How does the third party get that? What are the safeguards for the advertising that's done on Facebook itself? And so I think it just grew so big, and I would argue that there's probably some, I don't know what they're called, bad actors. They just have this Pollyannish view that data is data, and there's this pure freedom on the internet that shouldn't be questioned. Where I obviously many people want their right to decide the privacy control on their Facebook account. Now I would also say I think Facebook would argue that they're there. A lot of us would argue, yeah, but no one can understand how to really do that stuff. So creating a more simplified system would be helpful.
All right. You know it's not over, though, because here's – and what I'm talking about is the bigger picture. whether it's Twitter, who says all 336 members who are joined on, and some people who don't know they have Twitter accounts because you're automatically assigned one, in Facebook, at least we are in my personal experience anyway, you know, and Target and the hacking, that one way or another, this information is out there, and this is really, truly a case where our reach has exceeded our grasp when it comes to having this much information. And the way, you know, when I talk to some people who are smarter than me, which is not that hard to find, and I go out and I talk to them, and one guy in particular I'm on the phone with, and he is a U.S. Navy intelligence officer, computer background.
Right.
And he says, imagine Mark Zuckerberg has 100 million U.S. friends on Facebook, and 50% of them are Republican and 50% of them are Democrat, but he knows that if he issues a statement on his page urging you to go vote today, that 37% of those people will go. But he only issues that to the 250 million or whatever, what I say, 100 million, so 50 million people that are Democrats, and he knows that that will boost that. He says, just imagine that, and that's not even using other data. We've reached a point where the ability to manipulate people, if you're in correct positions, is rather profound, and we really haven't grasped that yet.
Oh, I would agree. I like to just simplify this in that Facebook and the use of that platform is free. Well, but there's no free lunch, right? Someone's paying.
Robert Heinlein, actually, the author, said that there's no such thing as a free lunch.
So if someone's paying you, the people who are using this free platform would say, well, how are they? I mean, I've been to their headquarters in wherever it's called, Mountain View, California, and it's just, it's bigger and grander than most of the cities in my district. So where does that money come from? Well, it comes from either advertising based upon them being to analytically analyze your data to you on Facebook itself, or someone else is being able to use that data. And the other concern is, the Russian involvement in misinformation using false Facebook names and creating rallies for and against. So. They have a lot of work to do.
Well, John, here's a good example. Here's a good example to back you up. The largest Black Lives Matter group was a white guy in Australia. Right? And now they've since taken him down. He was selling T-shirts, coffee cups. He had the most followers. He was soliciting money, and he got a lot of it, too. He was the largest group. But that anonymity there. John, you know, I feel kind of awkward about this part of the conversation. Here's why. Because I started talking about Nancy Pelosi, and I started talking about, unemployment. And I really, with you and I and me knowing your background, especially your UN background, your military West Point background, that there are big things going on in the world that we seemingly want to or are trying to be encouraged to ignore. When North and South Korea meet at the DMZ and shake hands, that is a big deal. I had a friend of mine, who spent time in the Korean War, and they told me it was the coldest they've ever been in their life. They've never been warm again. Right? You've got Iran. You've got Russia in another close scrape with one of their jets over the Baltic against one of our surveillance crafts within 20 feet going on for, I believe, 7 to 9 minutes. There are big items that have somehow in the national media in the United States been relegated to some dark corner. And this North Korea deal and the potential release now of three American citizens who have been held there for quite some time, these are big items. Why does so much of the media, you think, choose to ignore this, John?
I just think the public is more, it's reality TV, it's the salaciousness. I've been wondering that myself, and that so much time is consumed on the personal relations and interactions. And, I think it's still trying to litigate the presidential election, and it's just relentless, and you have these big events going on. Now, why would national media that really is opposed to President Trump, why would they tout this North Korean and South Korean reapproachment, this possible signing a peace treaty. Remember, they're under an armistice, and my dad served during the Korean War, and the release of these hostages. And the other day, I got a colleague from Indiana. I think it's Luke Messer who's circulating a letter to nominate President Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Right.
So, you know, that's got to drive the liberals crazy.
I literally did that bit yesterday morning. I want to see him win the prize just to watch a person's head literally explode on CNN. And there will be little bits of viscera on the camera. I'm talking about a literal explosion.
I mean, you look at the jobs report, economy growth, unemployment, wage increase, health care benefit increases. Then you see this North and South Korea thing. I'm still somewhat skeptical, but you can't argue that the dictator crossed into South Korea for the first time in his life. I can't explain it. It's just interesting to be able to observe it. And it's unfortunate that some of our national media reporters aren't highlighting the importance of some of these things while they're on the salaciousness of the personal lives of the president.
All right. And it seems that way every day. I mean, I've done a couple of bits of it. I think, to be honest with you, John, is I think it's starting to take a personal toll on me. My attention span's not all it could be on some items, but there comes a point where I'm going, all right, yeah, I get it. Enough, and one of the reasons why is because I live in Southern Illinois, John, and I don't have to tell you that circumstances are different here than many places in this country. I've got friends, family. I mean, I literally talked to my brother on Wednesday afternoon. He says, man, June 29th is my last day. Works Department of Corrections. He's on an extraction team. Right, June 29th, my younger brother retires, and what's he going to do? He's pulling the ejection button.
Well, we have our own problems in the state of Illinois, and that's why, I mean, why aren't we seeing the full economic benefits that the rest of the country is seeing? Well, because we're seeing growth. I've North American Lighting is expanding. I was at a place in Shelbyville this week, IHI Turbo. They're expanding, because they got plant and equipment there. Is it a tough decision for these corporations to stay and expand here? It is very tough. But I tell you, we need to have our workers be willing to travel a little bit or move to the areas that they're looking for jobs. I think one of the most frustrating things is to visit these manufacturing locations and the people say we just can't keep and hold jobs.
Yeah.
That speaks to the other thing we're talking about.
And I tell you, John, I had that same conversation working with a local group here that wants to look for employees, and I had a rather long meeting earlier this week on the subject, and the frustration was very clear. How are we going to address this? That we've got this revolving door. This is not good for our company. You know, we're talking about retention bonuses here. We're talking about signing bonuses, whatever we can to try to keep locked in so a business can have an expectation of employees because they need that for planned growth.
I know the IHI Turbo. One of the reasons that kept them in Shelby County was they have a loyal workforce that there's not turnover.
Right.
So they feel that they can get more workers and that they will be there for a longer time. That turnover won't be there like you see in some other communities.
John Shimkus. John, before I let you go, looking towards Washington, wait a second, are you're doing office hours? Are you doing that today or it's coming up? Elizabethtown, some other places?
I think
two of them.
And I don't know that far in the schedule. All I know is I'm headed to Danville.
Right. Hey, so what's coming up in D.C. that we should be watching very closely? I know the Iran deadline deal. That's on my radar.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so focused on addressing the national nuclear waste problem, and my bill's going to be on the floor on Wednesday or Thursday, and it's been a long haul. Illinois is a big nuclear power state. We have weapons waste all over the country, and it's been a kind of a lifelong goal to get our program back on track.
And you've been working on it almost all the time that I've known you as a congressman. You've been working on the Energy Committee. Are we talking about Yucca Mountain here, John?
Yeah, we are. And so we should see, and we're pushing for a big vote come Wednesday or Thursday to send a message to the Senate that it's time for them to try to start doing something.
It's interesting, John, when I look at this from my standpoint, and it's been a while since I've seen the research, so I'm afraid I may be a little bit shady, so I'll stay from the numbers. But when I was looking at research numbers based on deer in proximity to the Metropolis power plant and the presence of radioactive material in the deer that were harvested, that's before when we were still checking in deer, and then we've got a big pile of nuclear waste in northernmost Illinois along the lakeshore in Chicago that needs to be dealt with. You literally got these two areas that we're living between that really need this. It's about doggone time, I think, would be the John Shimkus phrase. We've been working on this a long doggone time.
Right. Right. So, I mean, we got other things going on, and we'll be working on our spending bill and the like, but next week's a big week for me, and I think for the country.